Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? Ready to get informed and inspired? I am too, so let's get to it. How Success Happens starts now. Today's guest found herself in a spot many of us have before. You've got a comfortable job that suddenly comes to an end, forcing you to make a very quick decision about what comes next. Well, Tammy DeShepper took this not so comfortable moment as an opportunity to pursue her lifelong passion for jewelry making and the arts, and it paid off. Her jewelry line called Tammy has been sold in over 100 galleries and boutiques. And since 2019, the business has absolutely thrived thanks to her decision to sell direct to consumers in Amazon's store. So if you didn't know this, more than 60% of sales in Amazon's store come from independent sellers, lots of small and medium-sized businesses, just like Tammy's jewelry business. So she is here with us today to share her entrepreneurial journey and her best tips for partnering with Amazon to grow a small business that connects with customers nationwide. Welcome, Tammy.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So great to talk to you. We've got so much to get to, but let's start where we always start on this show by asking you, Tammy, what does the word success mean to you?
I have to say, I always kind of struggle with this question because my answer is not a terribly sexy one. To me, success is being content with where I'm at. Because if you're content in the moment, I mean, what else can you ask for?
So when you had this kind of corporate position disappear on you, what was that? Were you feeling calm at that moment?
No. Calm was not at all where I was feeling.
So tell us a little bit about your decision to, you know, I think a lot of people, the instinct would be to scramble to find another thing just like it and just keep things going, but you decided to sort of use this as an opportunity to, as you said, pursue your passion. So can you talk a little bit about that decision?
Yeah. So in the late 90s, I had a job as director of international operations for a telecommunications company, and they were bought out, and I found myself without a position on Friday. On Monday, I put on my independent consulting hat and then spent the next 2 years on the road with my own independent consulting firm doing works for companies like Sprint and independent CLECs because everybody has problems with billing and provisioning in their backends. So that was going really well until the tech crash of 02 happened. And I found myself once again, what am I going to do? So while I'd been on the road those previous couple of years, because I was doing the out on Monday, back on Thursday thing for 50 weeks a year, I started making jewelry in the hotel rooms in the evening to kind of keep myself sane. And back then, that was before 9/11, so you could fly with pliers and wires and cutters and nobody would even give you a second look. And so I'd had some response, like I'd be wearing my jewelry and people would be like, oh, that's really cool. Can I buy that? And I'd be like, oh, okay, sure. So all the telecommunication company positions kind of came to a screaming halt because this newfangled thing called the cell phone was happening. So all the landline companies were kind of going out of business like the horse and buggy companies. I took some of my new experimental work that I was working on, which was basically working on different traditionally textile techniques, only doing them in metal, took them up to the museum in Des Moines. And the gallery owner there, the gift store owner there was like, wow, I've never seen anything like this. Can I buy this for my gift store? And so that was my first aha moment. Then I did my first festival and people actually bought my work. And I thought, oh, hey, this is where it's at. And so I wanted to try to create something that I was in control of, where I wasn't in that situation where I come in on a Friday morning and find out that I have no job because I had made my own job. And I grew it from there.
That's awesome. So this jewelry making, Is this something that, you know, you said you were doing it to keep yourself sane while on the road? Was it something you were interested in before, or is it like a, kind of like a hobby you picked up then?
Well, I'd always done a lot of stuff with my hands. Actually, this is my third business. So my first business was right out of college. It was another recession time, 91, and I could not even get a job at Subway because I had no previous food service experience, because that's how many people they had applying. So I took what I had learned during work study at the library, which was working with book repair, and created my own business called The Scriptorium, where I was doing archival quality book repair for libraries, churches, businesses that didn't have that on hand. So I've always wanted to do things with my hands. And the jewelry is great because it's small and it's portable, because there's no way to take like those large book presses with you.
Yeah.
I mean, on the road.
I've never used one, but I imagine that sounds quite large.
Yes.
So tell me, maybe that first sale, or what's that like, you know, when something you've created just out of the love of it, somebody buys it and then you see someone wearing your jewelry? How does that feel?
It's a rush. I call it, you know, spotting my work in the wild. It's always amazing when that happens. That's actually one of the few things that I miss about going to 100% online, is not being able to see people putting on my work, being radiantly happy and walking out of my booth. It really is nice to see the work of your hands making somebody else happy.
So you made the shift from the fine arts festivals to Amazon. And what was behind that decision?
Well, there was a few different things. The first is that the return on investment for fine art festivals was really declining. You know, weather was an issue, because when I first started doing art festivals, you could have like a nice, gentle all-day rain and people would still come out and go shopping. But by the time I left, it's like the dial was either perfectly nice or wrath of God. I mean, there really didn't seem to be much in between. And when you're in one of those little white tents, when the 60-mile-an-hour winds hit, that is really not great. Also, there was a huge oversaturation of shows. I mean, so many different organizations realize that, hey, this is a great fundraiser because we can charge the artist to apply to the show. We can charge the artist to have a booth at the show, and this will be a great moneymaker. So in cities where it used to be like everybody would look forward all year long to going to, you know, X festival, it was no longer a special thing. So then you also had the rise of, you know, places like Etsy, which is great. But if you had that hankering to search for something artistic and handmade, you could do that 24/7 online. And then plus the whole, you know, logistics of it, when you actually have to physically take cash from each customer and hand them something in person, you know, that kind of gives you an upper limit on how big you can grow your business, because there's only so many people you can physically directly interact with.
Well, yeah. So you're selling on the Amazon store, you're in a pretty rural location. That's got to be a pretty good way to reach all across the country without having to leave your house.
Yes. So in 2015, and it's hard to believe they'll be celebrating their 10th anniversary this year, Amazon rolled out Handmade at Amazon, which was going to be their answer to Etsy. And I was one of the original artists recruited to open Handmade at Amazon. And that was just such an amazing opportunity, because even when I was doing art festivals, you know, living in rural Iowa, I would have to drive, you know, 4 to 15 hours to get to a show. I live in a small town, so there's really not a lot of foot traffic so that I could open my own gallery. So yes, having this opportunity to be on a platform like Amazon was really great.
So how did you get into Amazon store? Can you kind of explain that process, and at the same time, give some advice for other people listening to this who are considering that?
Like I said, I was actually recruited. I had Amazon reach out because of my presence in the jewelry world, and they wanted to know if I could, you know, list on Handmade at Amazon. And at the time I thought, what? Handmade on Amazon? Because, you know, like you said, most people don't realize that Amazon is made up of lots of small independent sellers. I mean, 10 out of 10 people you talk to do not understand that you can buy directly from artists on Amazon. So it's kind of like a best kept secret. And so what I would really encourage people to do is to learn. So at the time that I joined Amazon, I was very involved, of course, in the art festival world. So if you talk to me about merchandising, how to talk to customers, in-person sale techniques, I knew all that cold. I knew nothing about selling online. When I made my first listing, I would look at keywords and be like, oh, it's sparkly, pretty, and nice, which is super embarrassing to think about now because that is not at all what keywords are for. So it wasn't until I actually took the time to take a class and really figure out what online selling was all about that things really turned around for me. So first of all, you know, educate yourself. Today, I would say, first of all, start with the classes that they have on Amazon. They're not, you know, big multimedia presentations, but the information there is solid. Because the thing about Amazon is that they have a lot of rules. And as long as you stay in the rules, you're fine. So learn the rules first, then go to YouTube, because there's a lot of people on YouTube giving a lot of really bad advice. So by understanding what the rules are before you go, you can help weed out the dude bros giving advice that's 10 years old. The second thing I would say is to join a community, because the landscape is changing all the time. And in a community, what one person can notice and communicate is so much more effective than you trying to be on top of everything. And there are lots of good, reputable communities out there for Amazon sellers. I've been a part of a number of them. Right now, I'm part of the Titan Network. And I'm trying to think of anybody that I know that's selling on Amazon that made it 100% on their own. And I can't think of anybody. So being a part of a community, I think, is really important.
How do you join a community?
They've always just kind of fallen in my way. Like, some of my first communities were focused specifically on handmade at Amazon, because it was a slightly different beast selling handmade. And so artists would just find each other and come together in groups. I am now just getting into like the wider Amazon communities, like the Titan Network, that are full of people who have been selling the more traditional way, where, you know, they create their own private label brand and market from there. So I think once you just start going out and doing research, these opportunities fall into your lap. But again, like I said, knowing what Amazon is about, what they allow, what they don't allow, will also help you to vet these various communities. Because, you know, there's, like I said, there's a lot of people on YouTube who are like, you know, join my community for X amount of dollars. But it's really a personality cult. So I guess one of the things that I would look for is it more than one person? Because one person can't know all the things, can't do all the things, be an expert in all the things. Is this a community that has more than one, you know, mentor, leader, teacher, seminar leader? So for me, that would be the first criteria, is how many different, you know, I'll put it in quotes, experts do they have in their group?
I love what you're saying too, because, you know, having spoken to people in all kinds of different industries doing all kinds of different things, I think the biggest misnomer or the biggest mistake people think is that, you know, we're all competitors. I'm keeping my secrets to myself. But I've found time and time again, people love to share what's worked for them. I mean, especially in the artist community, I feel like there's just such a giving spirit behind these businesses.
Well, yeah, because ultimately we're all in it together. And even if, you know, I'm selling jewelry and Betty over here is selling jewelry and Bob is selling jewelry, it's all different jewelry.
Yeah. Bob sucks. I just want to say that Bob is terrible. Don't buy Bob's.
But we're all talking to different people. Our jewelry is all saying different things. So, I mean, it's not like by helping Betty or Bob, I'm hurting myself, because if you can, you know, grow the market, grow the, you know, people who are interested in handcrafted jewelry, people who are, you know, interested in learning about how things are made, where things are made, the importance of, you know, knowing your supply chain, you know, what's the labor behind it, where is it coming from? It just helps everybody.
I know that the Amazon store, there's a lot of different tools you could use. Is there anything that you've used that you found to be incredibly helpful when it comes to finding new customers and growing?
My favorite tool on Amazon is FBA. That's Fulfillment by Amazon. So I can batch process, which makes things more efficient. So, you know, I can make 100 or 200 pairs of earrings, send it in Amazon. They put it in their warehouse and they take care of all the fulfillment, the distribution, the returns, the customer service. They take care of all the stuff that I think of as the ugh stuff.
Well, you don't like putting stamps on things and waiting in lines and...
No. You know, FBA is not without its challenges. Again, you know, there's rules. You have to know what's going on. But honestly, it's just so fabulous that I can concentrate on what I love to do, make jewelry. Amazon can concentrate on what they like to do, which is apparently fulfillment logistics because... their network. I mean, even here in my small town, rural Iowa, we are finally getting like Amazon delivery trucks running around town. I mean, it's crazy how their network has expanded everywhere. If I had to do it all myself, well, for one thing, you know, I can't send something through the post office for as cheaply as Amazon can fulfill it, you know, let alone buying the, you know, the packaging, like you said, the postage, the stamps, the me having to every day put it into an envelope, take it to the post office, or having to hire somebody that would sit here and then package things for me. You know, when you're selling, you have, you know, feast or famine times of the year, you know, so like March is, but Christmas, holy crap, you know, me having to like maintain the staffing for, you know, those fluctuations, it's just, it's just a level that I just don't even want to get into. So that is one of my favorite things about Amazon is FBA. I don't have to worry about any of that.
That's great. So we've talked a lot about, you know, the logistics and the revenue and the business behind it. Let's talk a little bit more about your inspiration for the art. Where does it come from? And I know that could be a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because that's what I do for a living. I ask dumb questions. But where does your inspiration come from?
My inspiration usually comes from two words. What if? It's more curiosity driven. You know, what if I decide to do this technique with 26 gauge wire instead of thread? What if I decide to do this and put this with that? What if I did that? And so it's purely curiosity driven. And sometimes the what ifs work out and sometimes they are hideous disasters. But even in the hideous disasters, you can see something and then that triggers another what if question and then you're off to the races again.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So what is it, you know, I know you were talking a little bit about that, like that sort of like art fair handoff of your stuff and the rush you get out of that. But I guess what's the rush you get out of seeing, you know, someone from very far away from you ordering your jewelry?
Amazing. You know, especially when you see an order go internationally, you know, oh, I'm an international artist. But it's crazy how, because when I was in college, my major was in ancient and medieval history, you know, so just the idea of, you know, where we're at today, where somebody in Australia can see my work and be like, oh, I would like to have that. And then they'll have it in a couple of weeks is just simply mind-boggling to me.
That's great. Do you hear from or do you connect with customers like on social media or anything like that?
Social media, actually, I connect more through email, which is kind of funny because I primarily sell to a older demographic who still prefer to just email me directly, tell me stories about wearing my work and how much they enjoy my work. And I tell you, when I get an email like that, it just makes my day.
Is there, you know, in pop culture or movies, or is there any person that kind of epitomizes like what you're trying to put through with your jewelry and your art? Is there someone you look up to as an icon?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say, well, the one that just comes to mind is like Audrey Hepburn. I try to do really classic things, you know, the kind of thing that you can wear today and get compliments, and 10 years from now, you'll still get compliments. People won't be like, oh my God, that's so 2020.
Does Mr. T factor into it at all?
Mr. T does not factor into it. Although, if he wanted to wear my work, I would be super tickled.
That's awesome. So I know Amazon has this premier seller conference, Accelerate, which I believe is coming up in a couple of weeks, and you've attended it in the past. So what is your favorite part of that event? Is that person-to-person interaction?
Yeah, the person-to-person interaction is a lot of fun. You know, a networking event is always fascinating because you never know who you're going to talk to next. You never know what kind of connections you're going to make. You know, even just sitting down at a table and the other random people that sit down with you, the impromptu conversations that you can have are really fascinating. But I'm also a what do I practically get out of it kind of girl. And my favorite part of Accelerate is actually the Seller Cafe, because you can bring any problem that you're struggling with to the Seller Cafe and get almost an immediate answer, an immediate result. Amazon does a really wonderful job of making sure that all of the addresses and a lot of the small group things are put up online. So if you can attend, you can still get the information. But yes, the two things that you can't get by doing it virtually at home, the surprises, those surprise connections that you make in Seller Cafe.
So just as we're talking, I'm realizing I have absolutely no idea how jewelry is made. Can you just give us a sort of rundown of like start to finish how a piece is made?
My technique is a lot more hands-on than other techniques. So my work starts with a spool of wire. And then I take that spool of wire and I chuck a mandrel into a power drill and then wind the wire around it. So it ends up looking like the spring on a screen door. And then I have a special tool that I cut that and it turns into hundreds of tiny little circles. And then I take those circles and I put them together one at a time with my pliers and create the different designs that I have. And it is more labor intensive, but the cool thing about that is that it's actually not something that you can replicate with a machine. Yeah, that's my competitive advantage, is that this is not something that, you know, somebody can take a picture of and the next thing you know, it's on Alibaba and everybody is ripping it off. I try to focus on the areas where I have a competitive advantage, which is the more hands-on things that you can't replicate with a laser or a stamping machine or, you know, something like that.
That's awesome. Wow. That's such a great note too, because, you know, you could look at that as, I don't know, problem is the right word, but like, yeah, you can't mass produce it that way, but you don't want to, because that's what makes it special.
People often have the misconception that on Amazon, it's a race to the bottom. So I sell primarily earrings and pendants on Amazon, and primarily earrings. If you go to Amazon and you look at, you know, earrings, for $2, I can buy a card with 20 earrings on it. My best sellers right now are $89 earrings. It just goes to show that you don't have to have that, you know, can I cheaply produce it and try to undercut everybody kind of mentality in order to succeed on Amazon.
All right, Tammy, I think we've found our way to the speed round. Are you ready?
Oh, geez. Let me put on my seatbelt.
Okay, here we go. So what is a habit that you are happy to have and one that you wish you could ditch?
My happy habit is I have a really good inner taskmaster. Keeps me on task, keeps me going, keeps me focused. The one I wish I could lose is my inner taskmaster, because it never turns off. So it's really hard to just, you know, sit down and chill and read a book or play a video game, because the inner taskmaster is like, hey, you know that never-ending to-do list? We have XYZ that still needs to be done. So yeah, my superpower is also my greatest darkness.
Wow, it's a Marvel movie in the making.
Exactly. This is my origin story right here.
Well, that leads me to my second question, but I think the answer is nothing. But what is your favorite way to turn off your brain?
My favorite way to turn off my brain is I read a lot of books. I love watching documentaries, and I love to knit while I watch documentaries, because as long as I keep my hands busy, it allows my mind to focus on other things. Documentaries are just fascinating to me because you get so many glimpses into different parts of life, and video games.
What's your video game?
I love long classic JRPGs. You know, things where you can sink hundreds of hours in, go on all the side quests, do all the things. That's for me. I have the reflexes of a sloth. So, you know, first person shooters, I last 3 seconds and then we're done. So yes, I do like those turn-based JRPGs because I don't need to have any reflexes.
That's great. Well, speaking as someone whose greatest video game accomplishment is clearing one board of Pac-Man, that's pretty impressive. When's the last time you were inspired by something that you'd say was weird, like something that came out of left field that inspired a piece of jewelry?
Okay, so a piece of rope.
A piece of rope. Okay.
So one of my, and this was also one of my more humorous ones as well. So there's a particular kind of rope weave called a crown sinnet. And so I would do that around a mandrel. So it would make kind of like an open weave. So it had a rope shape, but it had an empty middle. And then I filled that middle with pearls. And that became my rope of pearls. Dun-dun-dunch.
Huh. Wow, Tammy is stand-up comedian and everything. This is incredible.
Well, maybe I'm ready for my fifth business to go on the road.
That's great. And then finally, help us clueless gift givers out there. What's a no-fail gift if we know jewelry would be nice, but we don't know what we're doing?
Oh, that's another hard question, because jewelry is really a very personal choice. I don't know that there is any one size fits all. I would say you can't go wrong with a pair of classic gold earrings. But the other answer is, you know, spend a couple of weeks observing your gift target of choice. And, you know, just notice what they wear. Do they wear earrings? Do they wear necklaces? Do they wear rings? And, you know, kind of go from there.
And finally, I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite child when it comes to your jewelry line?
I would have to say it's the woven raindrops, because I did a line where I used a medieval finger weaving technique to weave fabric out of metal. And then I took glass and fused it together in my kiln to put different bubbles on top. And then when I put the woven metal behind the glass, that glass distorted the shapes of the weave underneath. And it's just, it almost made like a kaleidoscopic effect. You know, I think it's been probably 13 years now since I designed that one. And I have one sitting here on my bench, and I just love looking at it every day.
That's fantastic. And then finally, Tammy, I keep saying finally, but this is really the last one. For anyone listening to this who's dreamed of an artistic endeavor, maybe, you know, an artistic endeavor doesn't always immediately like, oh yeah, this is going to be a smash hit. So they're timid about getting started or worried. What's your best advice for just putting the worries aside and going for it?
Pretty much just that. Just put your worries aside and go for it. Because you never know until you try. And, you know, I think your brain can be your own worst enemy, because it'll put all these worst case scenarios out there. But, you know, sometimes you just have to sit with those worst case scenarios and just make them more and more ridiculous. You know, it's like, oh, I have this piece of art. I'm going to put it out there in the world. What's the worst thing that can happen? Heat death of the universe. Oh, okay. Well, okay. So maybe I'll just put it out there, because that seems pretty ludicrous to not put it out there because of, you know, imagined unfortunate effects.
That is fantastic. I love it. Well, Tammy, thank you so much. The jewelry line is called Tammy. That's T-A-H-M-I. And what's the best way for people to kind of see what you're up to?
Well, there's two ways. You can see me on Amazon if you go to amazon.com/Tammy, T-A-H-M-I, or you can go to my website, which is Tammy, T-A-H-M-I.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again so much. Very inspiring. I'm going to go find a piece of rope and make something beautiful out of it.
I can't wait to see what you come up with.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks so much, Tammy. This was great.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com, and I will ask our next guest.